It will maybe not surprise you to hear that this is not the sermon that I had planned to preach this morning. Now, I have two sermons that are all written and ready that I didn't get a chance to preach. And so, with your indulgence, I'm going to backtrack a little bit to last week, and especially to last week's gospel lesson. And I think if you hang in there with me, you will soon enough see why, especially the two of you sitting here who are doctors. I didn't change the title or the text for last week because they both turn out to be helpful to the idea that I wanted to reflect on with you together this morning. But even then, it is not the sermon I originally had planned for the 21st Sunday after Pentecost. It went through a lot of changes on its way to here. I warn my brothers and sisters in the sermon group against the temptation of spending too much time, maybe even any time, using this pulpit to reflect on personal experience. The responsibility of the preacher is to save souls. Yes, really. And it is difficult to convince me that anything about the particularity of my small life will help anyone toward that end. But now, I've had 4 unexpected weeks and 3 unexpected Sundays away from this spot. And as such, I have been fighting a pretty pitched battle with my preaching preferences. Because since I last stood here, I have had one of those experiences that changes your life indelibly, even if not all that dramatically. Thousands and thousands of people go to the hospital every day, and a lot of them go for the reasons that took me there. So there is nothing really special in that. But I find that I cannot but read this old gospel lesson very differently now from the way I did a couple of months ago when I first had a draft of last week's sermon pretty much in shape. So if you'll forgive me, I'd like to adopt the lens of that parable to talk about the 10 healed lepers and the 9 who didn't return to give thanks. Quick recap. On the way to Jerusalem, Jesus was going through a region between Samaria and Galilee. He entered a village. 10 lepers approached him. Keeping their distance, they cried out, "Jesus, Master, have mercy on us." And when he saw them, he said to them, "Go and show yourselves to the priests." And as they went, they were made clean. Then one of them, when he saw that he was healed, turned back, praising God with a loud voice. He prostrated himself at Jesus' feet and thanked him. And he was a Samaritan. And then Jesus asked, "Were not 10 made clean? But the other 9, where are they? Was none of them found to return and give praise to God except this foreigner?" And then he said to him, "Get up and go on your way. Your faith has made you well." The setup of that story is obvious enough. The affliction of those 10 men is the worst thing that can happen to you in the ancient world. It doesn't just make you sick, it makes you an outcast. It throws you over the wall and outside the community. It is a spiritual, not just a physical sickness. It doesn't just make you unwell, it makes you unclean. We know all that. And probably you also know that there's something important about the setting of the story, the road between Samaria and Galilee. These disciples and Jesus are like a little band of Newton Episcopalians traveling on the road through, Cambridge. They're in an unfriendly place. They're in a place where they do not belong, among people who are not their people, in a world where that is a stupidly dangerous thing to do. Samaritans are the bad guys of Jesus' world, or at least that is how they are seen, although Jesus sees them very differently. They're treated with suspicion and with disdain. And of course, as we always do when we think about the other, the people who are different from us, they are treated with real contempt. It is simply true that the people around Jesus are sure they know the moral motivations of those Samaritan people. And what they are sure they know is that those are bad people. So that's the setting. And we know how the story unfolds. But one of those Samaritans who's been healed returns. And we are meant to understand by this that he gets it. He understands what has been done for him and who did it and who Jesus is and all of that. So now think about this for just a moment. We don't know whether the other nine got it. Maybe they did. Maybe they got it to different degrees and in different ways. After all, when they keep walking instead of turning around, they are only doing what Jesus told them to do. They already know they're regarded with suspicion and disdain. Maybe they want to improve their reputation by doing what Jesus tells them to do. Instead, it's this one who comes back that we're going to focus on. And even here, Jesus, of all people, gentle Jesus, blessed Jesus, merciful Jesus, sort of buys into the disdain toward Samaritans, doesn't he? Was none of them found to return and give thanks to God except this foreigner? Imagine that you are that man. And you've had this earth-shattering moment of realizing suddenly that you don't have a terrible disease, a death sentence anymore. And what is more, you now know exactly why this happened. This man, Jesus. You'd heard about him. Now here's the proof. And you've made a tough decision, despite the fact that the man who gave you this gift gave you a directive about what to do next. You turn around. In a word, you disobey. And what happens? You get asked why the others didn't make the same decision, as though you could possibly answer the question. It's a little like me standing here and asking you right here this morning, why aren't all the other people here this morning? Why aren't they here? Not a really good message to offer to the folks who have already willingly come. It's that decision to turn around and give thanks that I think is really worth reflection. At least that is how it seems for me now. Because over these past 4 weeks, I have walked along the road with that Samaritan, at least to the extent of having an overwhelming sense of how much was done for me. I am an only child. And my mother and father are both gone, so when I went home to Michigan to sell my mother's house, I was going back to a place where I am now both a native and a stranger. When all this happened, I was staying almost accidentally with the family of a cousin I have known all my life, but with whom my engagements have been pretty typical of extended family. We see each other at weddings and funerals. Sherry and her family were immensely helpful to us when my mother was failing. But since that funeral, more than 6 years ago, I hadn't really seen Sherry at all. And all of a sudden, I was calling her and leaving a message to say, my dog is in my car, and my car is parked in the garage at the hospital. And my car is in the garage at the hospital because I am in the hospital, and I do not know how long I will be here, and can you help? And what I didn't know is that I should have said, I'm going to be really sick for the next 7 days, and would you mind if we used your guest room for a rehab facility and a urology clinic while you and your family go on with your work and your classes and everything else you have to do? I cannot quite put into words the response that I received, not just to my question, but to my circumstances. That family, that extended family, became my advocate, my lookout, my driver, my dietitian, my nurse. Pretty much, they simply stepped in and made everything okay. And they did it for both of us. Judy tore out of town pretty much as soon as I called and missed a week of her own work, although she did not do that before first calling Peter Wenner, who so gracefully and willingly stepped into this place for all of us, not just me, on the shortest of notice. And then there's all of you, and especially Patty and Alistair, our elected leaders, who very quickly solved the problem of what to do when it turned out that there was no way I was going to be back here in time for the next Sunday. I didn't even have to suggest to them the idea of going over to Trinity Church and the company of our neighbors in Newton Center. They just did it, and they let me know that it was happening and took that load off. And as if all that weren't enough, to find myself again in a hospital last Saturday morning with a fever that would not go away and a doctor telling me that I needed at least another 2 days of hanging around the IV rack with an antibiotic drip. Well, that sure wasn't the way I wanted this little hiccup of my healthcare holiday to end. But there was David Killian at the other end of the line, more than happy at a moment's notice to see us through last week. I like to think that there is a lot that I can do. That, like the job description say, I'm capable of managing a number of projects simultaneously and doing so with highly effective oral and written communication. But for the first time in my life, I have now gone through an experience in which a major accomplishment of the day was measured in terms of getting from the bed to the bathroom and back without passing out. It was the experience of being reduced in the most profound way, of realizing how absolutely frail I am. We all are. When things get just the littlest bit out of the very fine balance that our bodies miraculously maintain. And it was the experience of being completely and utterly dependent on the goodwill of others, Sherry and Judy and Peter and Patty and Alistair and David and all of you, to help, to be supportive, or just to be understanding and forbearing. But what is really overwhelming is to have received all of that in magnificent excess when I not only needed it, but depended on it. And that is what brings us back to our Samaritan. I think now I understand what he is feeling when he turns around. He knows he has to do something, say something, offer something in response. He cannot just keep walking. He has to reconnect in gratitude, or somehow his healing itself will not be complete. And so he comes back And the story tells us that when he does, all he can figure out how to do is fall down on the ground, that most abject image of humility, and say, "Thank you. Thank you." We don't know why none of the others come back. We only know that for this man, the postscript turns out to be decisively more important than the story itself. Something has been revealed to this man about the very nature of God in his experience, and he has returned to acknowledge that simple fact. He may have no idea who or what Jesus is, but he knows this: true friends reveal God most clearly. True friends reveal God most clearly. And they do so by giving us that experience of receiving compassion that elevates us into genuine human equality. Here's what I mean by that. We think of that moment of healing as Jesus somehow stooping down to heal those lepers, those outcasts from a terrible disease. But the postscript tells us that that's not what the story is about. The story is instead about how, by daring to enter into their moment of deepest need, Jesus is raising those people to the status of equals. He's acting out of his own awareness of his own capacity for suffering and frailty. And that is exactly what makes his act one of such powerfully transformative love. So powerful, it doesn't just heal them, but it breaks down the barriers of injustice and inequality between them. Pema Chodron, the Buddhist nun, has written that compassion is not a relationship between the healer and the wounded. It is a relationship between equals. Only when we know our own darkness well can we be present with the darkness of others. Compassion becomes real when we recognize our shared humanity. Exactly. That is exactly what happens on the road to Samaria. It is exactly the care that I received at the hands of the doctors and the nurses. That was skilled, but it is a relationship between people inherently unequal with those doctors, inherently unequal in skill and in power in all kinds of ways. But the care that I received from you, from my friends, my family, my colleagues, my fellow ministers, and from my poor, unsuspecting cousin, that was true compassion. And it brought me out of this experience feeling not only healed, but more human. Because more connected, less alone, and more equal. It is out of recognition for that that this one man turns around. And of course, when he does, he learns that there is nothing you can do to pay that back. All you can do is pay it forward. Here's the last point. This little crisis of medical care was a blessing, at least to the extent that it made all that realization possible for me. But of course, spiritually, that is exactly what God has done for each and every one of us. And for each and every one of the people who are not here and not even considering coming here, done through the initiative of Christ. Because Christ's initiative toward us isn't just healing. It is true compassion, in that it elevates us to the place that God made us for and intended for us to have, a place of true communion, true stature, and true equality with each other. Sometimes it takes a crisis to make all that clear. But once it's clear, life on the other side, just like for that one man, can never be the same. So whatever your story may be, I hope and I pray that you get the gift of a postscript to it. Because that is where the true awareness, the true conversion, and the true gratitude begins.